At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein stands ready to take your finance and investment questions and share his unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Monday, June 10th, 2024 edition. I am Justin Klein, and our objective here, as it is every day on InvestTalk, is to help you become a better investor. And I do this by, number one, answering your finance and investment questions. You are always top of mind. The show is about you and the things that you are thinking about. But obviously, we are knee-deep in markets every single day, looking at data, looking at companies, looking at industries, looking at charts and trends. And we have things that we think are important for you to hear. And we have topics that we will bring to the table as well. So that's what this show is. It's a mixture of what's on our minds and what is on your mind. So with that being said, we're going to look at the market performance here in a little bit and run down some show topics. But as usual, we're going to tackle our first caller question now.
Hi, guys. I was wondering what you guys think of the stock Albertson, symbol ACI. I've owned it for years. It hasn't done good in the last few years. I'm still up 23%. I'm wondering if I should just get out of it now. Just wondering about your opinion on it. Thank you.
All right, looking at Albertsons, it's the second largest supermarket operator in the United States, about 2,200 stores. And you're right, it has been languishing really since early part of 2022 when it's trading around $36, $37 per share. Now we're down around $20. And, you know, it has nothing to do with the fact that the company is losing money or anything like that. It's still making money, but not as much as it was during the pandemic, around $3.30 in 2023. This year, supposed to make only $2.52, down 12%. And that's really the issue, is that profits are shrinking. And shoppers are increasingly heading to stores that are more focused on natural products. And, you know, Albertsons just isn't that place. And a lot of the stores that they operate, their brands just aren't looked at as the place to go for healthy, organic foods. They do have a lot of debt as well in their balance sheet, and that's an issue. And so, you know, I just think there's better use of your capital elsewhere. It's not a bad company. It's still profitable, has good cash flows. It's at a reasonable valuation, that's for sure. But the problem is the earnings and the sales are shrinking to a degree. So I just think there's a lot better opportunities elsewhere, and I would move on from Albertsons. Remember, you have to be judicious with your capital. If you have money in something, that is, there's an opportunity cost there, because you could take that money and invest it elsewhere. And a lot of people do not think of that. They use, oh, I bought it here and I want to make sure I'm even, or, you know, they want to be right more than they want to actually put their capital in the right place. It's a psychological hurdle that is difficult to get over. But if you want to be a successful investor, you definitely have to do so. And I think this is the case with Albertsons. You just have to get over it and move on to something that is going to be moving in the right direction from a profit perspective and a growth perspective. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot to cover over the next 45 minutes. Our main focus is about Bitcoin and how to use it in your portfolio. We're going to look at the risk versus reward and how much cryptocurrency maybe you should have in your portfolio. What are the advantages and what are the risks as well of investing in cryptocurrencies overall? Okay. We also have other topics on the docket. One is private equity. Private equity has been struggling as of late, but In 2024, especially in Q1, there has been a wave of refinancing within the leverage loan space that has kind of kicked the can down the road a bit. And we're going to talk about private equity and whether or not this gives them some reprieve. There we go. For a little while from, you know, shrinking valuations and a slower economy. Okay, so we're going to look at that story. Also, a lot of startups are starting to raise capital to skirt regulate, and doing so by skirting regulations, crowdfunding, and the like. And we're going to look at that and what risks there are within the space and whether or not that's a place that maybe you should allocate some capital or not. And then lastly, if we have time, a lot of investors focus on the laggard stocks that are down. But the numbers show you should be doing the opposite. You should be focusing on companies that have good relative strength, not bad relative strength. That's why we talk about it a lot, but we're going to unpack some of the numbers there as well. So that's what's on the docket for us. We also have voice bank questions in regards to Graco, GGG is the symbol, and then Canadian Natural Resources. We also have some questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel. And of course, most importantly, your finance and investment questions that are submitted via our phone number, which is 888-99-CHART. We love your live calls. So if you're listening right now live, we encourage you to reach out. But we're also going to tackle some voice bank questions as well. But right now we're heading to a short break. And on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. And please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or an AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I had saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
So I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc., does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. It's all happening online and free tomorrow, but you must pre-register. On the next Wealth webinar, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero explain quality investing. Tuesday, June 11th, from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Tomorrow, learn more and register now at investtalk.com.
Now let's take a look at the market today. It was a decidedly positive day overall. We rallied through most of the day. The GameStop and AMC craze, that did cool off a bit. GameStop was down about 40% today. AMC down about 15%. You also had Marathon Digital, Bitcoin associated stock, let's just say that was down about 7% as Bitcoin sold off over the weekend a little bit. And you know, it was kind of a mixed market, frankly. Even though, you know, large caps are up about 0.33%, mid caps are up nearly 0.5%, so that was certainly a positive. But we have the Fed meeting on Wednesday, and the Fed meeting starts tomorrow. But obviously, their announcement will be on Wednesday. That will press conference, and that will go a long way to adjusting market expectations for Fed policy going into year end. There's a 99.4% chance they will do nothing. They will pause on this Fed meeting. But going out to July and September, there's a 91% chance of a continued pause. Only a small chance of a cut in about an 8% chance of a cut in July, September is where things start to get a bit more interesting. It's about a 50-50 chance that we'll get at least one cut by September. And then by December, the odds are coalescing around 1.5 cuts by then. And obviously the Fed jargon, shall we say, will move those expectations, will move the currency markets, will move the rate markets, and ultimately the credit markets and the stock market. So that's kind of what the market is likely waiting for as we head into the middle of the week. And we're through earnings season pretty much, so we're not going to get much of that. But, you know, the quarter end is just a few weeks away. We also have quarterly OPEX, not this week, but next week. So that's certainly going to be a bit of a market mover. So next week could be quite an interesting week as those market participants shuffle around their positioning. But ultimately, I don't expect a whole lot of fireworks until Wednesday. Okay. That was the market today. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends that our Invest Talk audio podcast is also available in video form over on YouTube. And what we do is you can see our beautiful faces as well as we share our screens and data when we're looking at particular companies. Now, Lincoln Roberts says Steve will be missed and part of his legacy will be the great advice he provided and the lives his advice changed for good and forever. That's certainly true. There's one question about Landstar System, LSTR. So the bid price is way lower than the ask price. The ask price is almost four times higher. I own a few shares and I'm confused about whether to buy or sell. Well, Lincoln, one question would be is, are you looking during market hours or are you looking after hours? Because after hours, the bid and ask spread tends to be very wide. It's a very illiquid market. So don't expect those bid and ask prices to be relatively close. Now, Landstar itself, it trades, let me look at the 50-day moving average. This is what we tend to focus on, is what is the 50-day moving average? What is the number of shares traded on each day? And for Landstar, it's 260,000 shares, the 50-day average volume. On a $184 stock, that's fairly liquid. Definitely not the most liquid stock in the world, but you know, it's a $6.5 billion company. It's a mid-cap. There's a good amount of shares trading every day. So the bid and ask is not going to be that wide. I can't look at it right now on what the bid and ask spread is during the day because it's not during live trading hours. So when you're looking at the bid and ask spread, make sure you're focusing on intraday bid and asks, not after hours, because those are going to be far, far wider. Okay. Thanks for the question submitted via our YouTube channel. Now let's keep things moving and pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a question that came in earlier.
Hey, Justin and Luke, Jake here from North Carolina calling about Graco, ticker GGG. Looks like a mid-cap industrials name, specifically in the machinery industry. The business looks like they do far more than just machinery, but very little debt, was beat up the last 3 to 6 months, the stock price was. Looks like it's had fairly consistent earnings growth. Just wondering what I'm missing and what the story is, and of course your opinion on the company and a price point. Thanks so much. Listen on the podcast. Bye-bye.
All right. Looking at a name we've actually been picking up lately for clients, Graco manufactures equipment used for managing fluids, coating, and adhesives. So this is in the industrial, automotive, and construction space. They make pumps, valves, meters, sprayers, And to us, this is a reshoring play. Not a giant company, but $13 billion market cap. And like the caller said, it has very little, actually negative debt in its balance sheet. So it has net cash on its balance sheet. Return on equity, 23%. Return on invested capital, 22%. And this kind of links up with what we're talking about tomorrow on our webinar, which is quality investing. Companies with high return on invested capital. And we like it in the low teens, ideally mid-teens or higher. And this one is at about 22%. And that's about the midpoint of where it's traded or where it's performed from an ROIC perspective over the past decade. And so we like that consistency. We like the low debt and the growth that reshoring is going to continue to provide. So while it's not trading at super low valuations, something also we're going to talk about tomorrow is what valuations to look for when you are trying to find dividend payers, quality companies, et cetera. And what you'll learn tomorrow is that you're rarely ever going to get these trading at cheap, cheap valuations. And right now it's trading at, to us, modestly undervalued. Not dramatically undervalued, but modestly undervalued. But that's what you want. You want a good company trading at reasonable prices. And Graco, I never know how to say it. I think it's Graco, is a candidate for that. Thanks for the call. Now, as we go to a break, let me remind you of our all-new InvestTalk Wealth webinar coming up tomorrow. The title is Quality Investing, Digging Deeper Than Dividends. I'll be hosting along with Luke Guerrero, and it is free. It's happening online, once again, tomorrow, June 11th, from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific time. But you do have to register over on investtalk.com, and it is free to attend, but once again, you must pre-register. And now, the phone lines are open, waiting for your call at 888-99-CHART.
This is InvestTalk, with more than 58 million downloads. Justin Klein is here now, taking your calls live. 888-99-CHART.
Now, today's focus point is about Bitcoin and how to use it in your portfolio overall, and just cryptocurrencies more broadly. How much should you allocate? And the question differs, or the answer differs for everybody. And but it's pretty clear that no matter what, it should be a small slice of a diversified portfolio. And you must be willing to hold it for an extended period of time. Because cryptocurrency has only been around about 15 years now. Short period of time. And the volatility has been nothing short of breathtaking. And it's very difficult to value because there's no underlying cash flow generated by them. And a lot of it has to do with what the next person will pay and how, and adoption, right? And that's why adoption is so important with the cryptocurrencies, because without a use case for them, then it's just about who's going to buy it from you, as opposed to, hey, I can take this and go buy goods and services with it. Now, Bitcoin will, those that love Bitcoin will say, well, it's a store of value. That could be true, but it's not the only store of value that's out there. So a lot of it has to do with the story. Now, that story can continue to find more believers and ultimately more adopters. And that's frankly what's going to be needed. And that's why there needs to be tools and use cases for these cryptocurrencies. But we know that more often than not in today's world, it's co-opted for financial gain. And that's the vast majority of those that are engaged within the crypto space. And only a small slice are actually doing the work behind the scenes to build use case, actual applications. Now, that doesn't mean that you avoid it altogether. It certainly can't have a role. But know that it's high risk. Now, with high risk comes potentially high return as well. Crypto is no exception. Since 2015, Bitcoin has been nearly five times as volatile as U.S. stocks. And that's Bitcoin. That's the least volatile of the cryptocurrencies. Ether has been nearly 10 times as volatile. So what that means is just a small amount of cryptocurrency in your overall portfolio can dramatically increase the total portfolio risk profile. Bitcoin has suffered losses of 40% or more during at least five periods over the past decade. From 2013 to 15, it was down 81%, nearly 82%. 18 to 19, down 75%. July 19 to March 2020, 42%. Most recently, November 2021 to December of 2022, down 72%. So we know there's huge volatility. But Bitcoin has historically generated strong enough upside returns to make up for those losses or for that volatility. But we also know there are hundreds, actually 1,400, according to CoinMarketCap, 1,400 different currencies, cryptocurrencies, that have no trading volume and are essentially worth zero. So the vast majority of cryptocurrencies that have been created are essentially worthless. Now, there has become some adoption within the ETF space. We know that. So that's one way to gain exposure, and it's easier than ever to buy Bitcoin through that. And I think that's a reasonable avenue if you want to add that to your portfolio. There are also crypto mining companies, mining equipment suppliers, companies that develop and use blockchain and other digital asset technologies. But historically, those are actually slightly more volatile than pure play ownership of Bitcoin or Ether or any other cryptocurrencies. So understand what you're getting into. You know, I think of like Marathon Digital. People that I know people that are big Bitcoin believers. Oh, what do you think of Marathon? Well, I think it's just a more leveraged bet on Bitcoin. And if that's what you want, know the volatility that you're getting into. And a lot of people also say that they are diversifiers, and to some degree that's correct. But over time, they've actually become more correlated with traditional asset classes like stocks, especially technology stocks, the NASDAQ. Why? Because those that tend to own cryptocurrencies also own a lot of tech stocks. And when one does well, they have more assets to buy the other, but vice versa. A lot of them deploy leverage. And when one side goes bad, they need to sell the other side in order to cover losses. So that's why there tends to be a lot of correlation between those two asset classes. So how much should you have in your portfolio? Well, definitely less than 5%. And for many investors, you should skip it altogether, especially those that are probably retirees that can't handle the volatility. But if you do deploy it, make sure it's a very small percentage of your. Now, the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this topic. Lessons for investors from the father of modern finance. There's a hypothesis that says all relevant information is already factored into stocks. We'll talk about that story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to see your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Let's say you've been thinking about learning a new language. Okay, why? I mean, how would it come in handy? And where would you want to use it? Could it be that you have an upcoming international trip? Or maybe you want to connect with family members or friends from a different culture? I think you should know about Rosetta Stone. With millions of users, it's been the world's most trusted language learning program for 30 years. Rosetta Stone is available on your desktop or as an app with audio companion and the ability to download lessons offline. Rosetta Stone truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. It has a built-in, patented speech recognition engine called True Accent. So as you practice speaking, you'll get feedback on how well you pronounce words. With Rosetta Stone, you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's an intuitive process designed for long-term retention. You really learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. Rosetta Stone is an amazing value. So your special skill set is within easy reach. You know you want to do this. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, InvestTalk listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off now at rosettastone.com/today. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, You transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's all happening online and free tomorrow, but you must pre-register. That's right, on the next Wealth webinar, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero explain quality investing. Tuesday, June 11th, from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time, the next InvestTalk Wealth webinar, tomorrow. Learn more and register now at investtalk.com.
Hi, this is Brian from Ocala. God bless your company and your families as you grieve Steve's loss. I was wondering if you could take a quick look at CNQ, Canadian Natural Resources. Their profitability, return on income, return on assets and equity looks pretty solid. Their debt looks manageable, and they have healthy margins. I'm kind of wondering if this is the Canadian oil company that Justin teased the other day. So thank you for your assistance. Bye.
You got it. Canadian Natural Resources is the name we've actually been picking up recently for clients, and you're correct. We like their heft, their diversity. They have a lot of assets in Western Canada. They're going to benefit from the recent pipeline that's going to open them product up to into the West Coast as opposed to forcing it through the Midwest. And we think that's going to improve their pricing and allow them to sell their oil and gas for higher margins. So we like that. They also have some assets in the North Sea, and South Africa. They also have some midstream assets, which we like. And overall profitability, very solid, around 15% return on invested capital. And, you know, historically, that's about average over the past decade. So good name there with, I think, some upside that hasn't been realized quite yet. And very little debt on its balance sheet compared to its size. So overall, Canadian Natural Resources is our top pick in the Canadian oil space. Thanks for the call. Now, let's touch a bit on private equity. And private equity grew dramatically. Private debt grew dramatically during the era of low interest rates. It's really what made drove private equity and the numbers, which is, hey, we could finance the purchase of these companies that have good cash flow and leverage up the balance sheet with cheap debt, 4 or 5%, and over time pay down that debt and grow out of it. And it was basically financial engineering enabled by ZIRP, right? Zero interest rate policy. Problem is that ZIRP is gone. We're no longer in ZIRP. We're in a much higher interest rate environment, right? 10-year around 4.5. And borrowing money is more expensive. Now, it has come down as of late. The spread on U.S. term loans have tightened by almost 100 basis points over the last 12 months through the first quarter. And what that has allowed private equity to do is refinance a lot of that debt at higher rates, but rates that are, in most cases, doable. And what it's going to allow private equity to do, potentially, is basically give them breathing room to grow their way out of the debt and find an exit. Because typically what these private equity companies do is they buy a host of assets. A lot of them try to buy up all the companies within a particular niche. So they're dominant within a small segment of an industry. Raise prices, raise margins, consolidate staff and reduce headcount, and use that excess cash flow to pay down that debt. The issue, though, is that that's usually a 10, 15 year plus time horizon. And a lot of the deals that happened in, 2015 and on, shall we say, up until the pandemic, they don't have that runway. So what they've been doing instead is they've been issuing net asset value loans, basically taking their entire portfolio rather than layering debt on a single company. And that spreads the risk of the debt. And it provides a way to keep feeding the companies that maybe aren't doing so hot to allow them to have a bit more time. Now, what that also does, though, is it weighs on the companies that are doing fairly well, but yet haven't found an exit. And the question will be is, when will they get an exit? Public markets multiples have improved. We've seen that as of late. But they haven't improved enough to really open the IPO window dramatically. It's opened a little bit here in the US, a little bit in Europe, but only for really slam dunk stocks. Companies with clear vision, clear product that are doing very well. But that's in a time where financial conditions are fairly loose. And the exits have been fairly meager as of late. The industry as a whole has $3.2 trillion of assets. But exits in the first quarter were only $81 billion. About 2.5% of that. Down 22% compared to the first quarter of last year. So what this is saying is that the private equity space is not under major stress in the near term at the moment because of those looser financial conditions. But this has only delayed, I think, the problems within the space. So it's another reminder that, you might have some more runway. If you own some private credit assets, you might have been sold it through, a big brokerage firm like a Morgan Stanley or Merrill Lynch, etc. And they might tell you everything is fine. And this refinance says, yeah, it's fine for now. But it doesn't alleviate their problems long term. This gives them a little more runway, but, are they moving? Are they moving fast enough to actually take off at some point? And with rates this high, it's unlikely. So I wanted to give you that quick update. Let's go talk to Mark in San Diego looking at Charles Schwab.
Yeah, I have some stock, made some profit. I'm wondering if it's time to sell or just hang on.
Well, we bought Schwab a while ago, last fall, and we like it. We think that they, with the consolidation of TD Ameritrade, this is where we custody our client assets, but we just like the combination there, that half that, it was a big swallow, for Schwab to acquire TD. And there were certainly some growing pains, but, things continue to improve and their profitability continues to improve as well. And then, I think there was a little bit too much of a worry for their treasury portfolio was underwater, and there's going to be some sort of running the bank there. But the reality is that they just have a lot of assets that clients, are putting with Schwab. So it's not your typical bank, and these assets are far stickier than your Silicon Valley Bank, et cetera. And so I think that was driving the worries last spring. And I think largely those problems have been, I don't want to say alleviated, but it's pretty clear that this isn't going to be an issue with Charles Schwab. And we love the brand, the profitability. There's expectation of record profits next year, $4.35, up 33%. And they have, a solid balance sheet, a lot of assets. They're buying back stock. Return equity, 12.4%, but that is on the rise. So we like that. And yeah, I would just hold it. It has pulled back as of late, but I see no issue with Charles Schwab on the medium term. Could it pull back a little bit more? Absolutely, it could. But we'd be buyers on any more weakness. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Chris in Maine looking at IEX. That is IDEX Corporation. You own it or looking to buy it?
Hey, Justin. Thanks for taking my call. I own it. It was actually when I talked to Steve a while ago, and he liked the company and said on a dip he would be a buyer. Mm-hmm. And it dipped below 200 last December. Mm-hmm. I picked some up, and it was doing quite well. And then it's kind of trending back down after this last earnings. So I was kind of just seeing what you thought of it, if you think it was still worth holding or if I should get out of it while I'm still up.
Yeah. This is IDEX. It manufactures pumps, flow meters, valves, fluid systems. So kind of similar to Graco. And you're right. It has pulled back from about $245 per share to $202 right now. And as Steve said, it's a good company. Return on equity around 17%. Return on invested capital around 12%. Both very solid numbers and very consistent numbers really overall. So I like the long-term profitability and the fact that, earnings continue to just go up and up pretty much every year. Only 2020, they had a bit of a dip, but that was during COVID. So that was to be expected. A 1.3% dividend yield, but earnings and sales have been falling as of late. Revenue down 5% last quarter year over year, earnings down 10%. And you're expecting a little bit more shrinkage in Q2 as well, while resumption of growth in Q3 and Q4. So I see why it is coming down because, it's not trading at cheap valuations. If you look at its P ratio around 25, enterprise value to EBITDA around 17, those are higher than average. But once again, it's a solid company. I think around the 200 level, though, is a fair value. They have good debt. Very little debt. It's a good company. I have no problem with picking up more down here below 200. It's in a consolidation phase, and I like the company. Would I pick Graco over this one? Probably, very similar type of names, but both are very good companies. So I like what you're looking at, and it just depends on which one you prefer.
Yeah, thanks. Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Now here's another question from the Invest Talk YouTube channel. Roger says, hey guys, wondering what your thoughts are on Cintas, C-T-A-S is the symbol. And this one has really been on a tear. During COVID, it hit a low of $160 per share. Now it's at $684 per share. And it's been consolidating as of late, right around, let's call it 680 or so. It's at 684 right now. And for everyone else out there, what Cintas does is they make uniforms. Okay, they provide corporate identity uniform programs that are rented and sold to 1 million clients worldwide. So, think of any large corporation that has a consistent uniform. Most of them turn to Cintas to produce those uniforms, issue new uniforms, etc. Okay, so a lot of those companies, they don't want to build or they don't want to produce those things in house, so they go to a company that knows how to do it and has scale to do it and has been doing it for a long, long time, and so that is Cintas, and that's why their profitability is very, very good. Okay. And if you look at return on equity, 38%, return on invested capital, 23%. So you're barking up the right tree here. We emphasize quality names. You want to be looking at quality names with a good balance sheet. And this has pretty much no debt in its balance sheet. The problem here is valuation. Enterprise value to EBITDA is at 30. That is pretty extreme, especially for a company who's not really producing a lot of growth. I mean, I wouldn't say a lot of growth. Growth is fine. Revenue growth last quarter, 10%. Earnings growth, 22%. That's solid growth. But paying 30 times enterprise value to EBITDA is a bit extreme. That's the highest that Cintas has ever traded at, ever, from a valuation perspective. Price of sales, you're sitting at about 7.5 times. And this is where I go, I like that this absolutely should be on your watch list. It's on our watch list. It's a very good company. But to pay this multiple for such little growth, I'd pass on it. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Bill in Northern California looking at GPN.
Yeah, hi, Dustin. I almost previously sold it up, I don't remember, sometime last winter, in like 128, I think. And yeah, it goes through its natural price cycle. It was really high a couple of years ago, but fortunately I had sold it before it started going down. But it seems like, you know, it's probably going to go in a range here from the mid-90s up to 130s unless something drastic happens there at that company. But what do you think of it overall and then at this price especially?
Yeah. So this is Global Payments Network, Global Payments Inc., excuse me, GPN is the symbol. And what you're looking at here, I think, is a value trap. It looks cheap. You're looking at earnings of $10 this year, $11 next year on a $97 stock. It looks like it's a, you know, high single digit multiple. The problem is that they have a ton of debt, $18 billion on a $24 billion market cap. I don't like that. Their free cash flow is solid, $1.4 billion, but it is headed lower. And that's why the stock is ready to make new lows for the past couple of years. So I actually would stay away from GPN. I want something with less debt. Now we're going into a final break. Let's get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
It's all happening online and free tomorrow, but you must pre-register. On the next Wealth webinar, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero explain quality investing. Tuesday, June 11th, from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific Time, tomorrow. Learn more and register now at investtalk.com.
Hello, Steve or Justin. My name is Richard Hernandez. I am a 22-year-old new investor. I was just calling about a stock called Fastenal, and I was just wanting to get your opinion on it, if you think it's a good company. I know it's, it's gone down a little bit as of lately, but I don't know, just where you think a good buy would be, if you think there would be a buy point, possibly. But yeah, if you could just let me know, I'll be listening to it on the podcast. Thank you.
All right, looking at Fastenal, congratulations, such a young investor focusing on quality, another good company. Return equity, 34%. Return invested capital, 31%. Very, very high. Fastenal should be on everyone's list. But the question is, when do you buy? And one issue as of late is that Fastenal has reversed pretty dramatically, a high around $79 per share. Now we're down to $63 in just the past 3 months. And the big question is, where is the support here? And you know, one of the main issues of why it's reversing is growth is slow. Last quarter, growth was only 2% on revenue, whereas a year ago, it was in the mid-teens. And then earnings were flat year over year, and a year ago, that was around 20%. So this is a good example of when growth slows, multiples come in. And it's currently trading at about 32 times earnings. If you go by This year's earnings of 207 at $63. You're talking about a 31 multiple. So that's pretty high for a slow growth name. And you know, it's a quality name. So you're going to pay above market multiples, but what is that? And I would say the major support level on this is around 55. It's about 10% lower. Now, does that get you into a valuation that's reasonable? I still think that's a little bit high. I would rather own it closer to 45 than 55, but 55 is a good place to maybe start your position on Fastenal. Good company. You're barking up the right tree. Once again, I love that people are learning from the show and focusing on those quality businesses, and Fastenal is certainly one of them. Now, speaking of not quality businesses, let's discuss what is called Regulation A. And this was a rule passed, I want to say post-financial crisis, that helped smaller companies raise capital. And it looks like many of these smaller names are starting to abuse the regulatory exemption that allows them to really hype their products and make these grandiose claims, very similar to what Elon did with Tesla, to raise huge sums of money from individual investors. Now, in the grand scheme of things, it's not huge, but for a lot of people, the amount they're putting in is huge. Tens of thousands of investors have invested in a small company, pouring over $170 million into companies like Aptera and Boxable. And what they tend to not talk much about is that they're burning through tens of millions of dollars. And many of these small companies don't have any sales, yet they continue to raise more capital through this exemption. Aptera, for example, has been telling investors for 3 years it would soon deliver its first solar-powered car, but hasn't shipped any. And once again, the SEC approved this exemption about a decade ago. And it allows businesses to annually raise as much as $75 million while complying with a very light amount of regulation, much less than a traditional IPO. And there are crowdfunding platforms like StartEngine and Republic that are helping these companies find investors. And what they're also doing is they are leveraging social media and building out a big following. Aptera has raised more than $120 million from 17,000 investors since 2021, yet has no product, promising 1,000-mile range for their three-wheeled electric vehicle. And they just make marketing videos in order to raise more capital, bring more fans, and promising discounts on the end product, which never comes. But 85% of these companies that raise capital under Reg A have zero profits or negative net income. And a lot of them have no revenue either. So make sure you understand this. And when you're throwing money at these small names through a Regulation A exemption, you're probably going to lose it all. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And sign up for the Invest Talk Wealth webinar coming up tomorrow, less than 24 hours away. But you must register over at investtalk.com. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial.